Well, hello everybody. I have to say it's a real pleasure to be able to come and talk to you when we are winning. So I will do my pitch and get off the stage quickly in case that changes, because I have to say that in the history of this particular team, we've not exactly been winners very often. I'm going to talk to you about something a little different today. I'm not going to talk to you about the sorts of things that the previous presentations have covered specifically. I'm not going to talk to you about Tivoli or automation or service management in particular, but what I am going to talk to you about is best practices. And hopefully you'll be able to take some things away from what I'm going to say to you today, because I'm going to tell you about how we operate inside the Formula One team and why best practice is something which is becoming increasingly important to us in the way that we operate as an organisation. So, apologies to those of you who've seen me speak before, because some of these slides will look similar to what you've seen before. However, the photographs are all new. So please look at the photographs if I'm boring you with the words. We are a member of a rather exclusive club. The Formula One community is just 10 organisations, 10 teams, and we're all competing in what is a very sort of global shop window. We're on television every weekend or every other weekend, and I have to say you do ride a roller coaster of emotion when you're watching a Formula One team, especially if you're involved in it. It is a very competitive environment. An environment in which the very finest of differences can mean the difference between P1 or P2 on the grid, and as you see on, if you watch the programme on television, how much of a difference that makes at the first corner, or indeed at other parts of the race. We're all very technology reliant. We push technology for competitive advantage, and I'm not just talking about information communication technology, but also materials and things like that. And it's interesting that the FIA at the moment are trying to rein in people's use of very expensive materials because it is so costly. And we are rather secretive and security conscious as well, which is why I tend to be a little vague sometimes in my presentations about some of the details. A brief history of the team. This slide has changed as well, actually, because Honda announced their withdrawal from Formula One in December of last year. A really, really black day in my career. You know, to know that you're walking into the office and your employer has said, we're pulling the plug on it. But Ross Brawn and Nick Fry had the confidence of what we'd been working on during the last, or the previous 12 months, to say this was actually worth saving. And there's one over here if you want. In the middle, on the front. This was actually worth saving, and as you know, we became known as the Brawn GP team. In fact, I think on about March the 5th of this year, having not turned a wheel in anger or in testing, we then rocked up to the Barcelona race circuit the following week and set the fastest time of winter testing, which just demonstrated, I think, the confidence that Ross in particular had in the organisation. One of the best bits, we've had a bit of checkered career, really, a checkered history, but to actually be able to say we're currently leading the championship is something that I have to say I relish being able to say. Honda started to get involved in 2004 when they became, at the end of 2004, they became a joint shareholder with British American Tobacco. And pumped a lot of money into the team, investments in wind tunnel and dynamometers and all sorts of other stuff, and indeed people. And I think the combination of poor performance, market downturn, you know, the general economic climate as well, resulted in Honda taking, I think, what was in many respects a sort of, many people believe, a knee-jerk reaction in deciding that they had to pull out of Formula One. Very hard for them to lay people off in one part of the country when they're busy spending lots of money in another part of the country on something which could arguably be considered to be quite frivolous. The sad thing really for Honda is the fact that I think they pulled out at the time when things were just being sorted out. And to be fair to them, our success today stems largely to the organisational structures that Ross Brawn put into place and the work that we were doing with Honda last year. And it's a real shame that they actually aren't able to sort of share in the success that we're experiencing at the moment. Another key factor, though, it's important really to say, especially as we're here in Mercedes-Benz world, is that we have a Mercedes-Benz power plant in the back of the car. And that has made 75 to 80 horsepower difference in performance coming from the powertrain. So it's quite a significant change there as well. So we operate from a factory location in Brackley in Northamptonshire. This was a purpose-built location set up for British American racing back in sort of 99. And it's a high-tech facility, and we have some of the latest, greatest generation of machining tools, wind tunnel we've already mentioned. Everything that you look at inside the organisation is right bang up to date. It's something that we have the luxury of right now. Our ability to continue to develop and maintain such a high-tech environment is going to be very much dependent on where the FAA go with budget capping, but also in terms of our ability to generate revenue, because we have suddenly become a privateer team. And that means we have to think quite differently inside the organisation. And that's been quite a challenge for us over the last 3 to 4 months. We had over 700 people employed in the UK. Now, that doesn't include any of the Honda personnel. There were over 200 of them in Japan working on the Formula One programme. So we've come down to around 450. And the sad part about it is you've got to do those kind of things when you're faced with the kind of challenges that we have been faced with. Essentially, we're a light engineering business with this sort of mobile front office that travels the world. And everybody inside the organisation is passionate about racing. And the real hard part for us, having come first and second in the Australian Grand Prix, was that 2 days later we started the redundancy process. And it was really very flat. It was as if everybody was wearing black armbands inside the organisation. We couldn't really celebrate the success on track because of what was happening behind the scenes. And those people who left, they were all part of this. They all helped to actually achieve what we are currently achieving. So at Brackley, we have this high-tech environment, as I've already mentioned. I said that we're like a light engineering business, so we've got applications there that you'd expect, like CAD and CAM and enterprise resource management. For those of you who are interested in this kind of stuff, we use CATIA, and we also use Innovia V5. We had some significant challenges with that. And that was one of the things that Honda brought with them, a desire that we should use the standard tool sets that they use inside their organisation so that we could share information together. Such a shame, really, that we just got to the point where it's beginning to give us some value when they've walked away. We also use SAP, and I have to say to you that we probably couldn't run our business without SAP anymore, because we life the car using SAP. We build the car on SAP virtually before we actually build the car. And that enables us to know whether we're about to put components on the car which could break during, or there's a risk that they will get to the end of their natural life during the course of the event. Now, this is actually critical to us because we did very little testing during the winter. And to be able to turn up to the first race and be competitive but also last the whole distance of the race, be reliable, is absolutely critical to us. And we've had two car finishes in every race so far this year, and it's thanks largely to the processes and the systems that we have behind the scenes that we've been able to achieve that. We also have some very specialist applications. We have a supercomputer which runs Fluent and also OpenFOAM to do a lot of the CFD, computation fluid dynamics modelling, and things like finite element analysis. So all sorts of things that you'd expect to find in a major motor manufacturer. We're doing a lot of that stuff actually in Formula One as well. But what is best practice? Now, when I was asked to do this this talk, I thought, well, you know, what is best practice? How would you define it? So I went to the web and did a bit of Googling to see what came up, and some stuff I liked and some stuff I wasn't so keen on. So I've put up the stuff here that hopefully you will also feel is relevant. Best practice is a superior method or innovative practice that contributes to the improved performance of an organisation, usually recognised as best by other peer organisations. One of the key things that happened 18 months ago was that Honda hired Ross Brawn. Now, why does one man make a difference between an organisation being successful and an organisation not being so good? He basically got us working together properly. He got the feedback loops working. He got the communication working. It's all about best practice, really. And he's recognised in the Formula One world as being someone who's had success in two other teams, and he's recreating that now inside this organisation. And the key thing, I think, is that he's got us working better together. He's got the organisation working properly. And at the moment, we are being recognised as best by other organisations. Best practice does imply accumulating and applying knowledge about what is working and what is not working in different situations and contexts, including lessons learned and the continuing process of learning, feedback, reflection and analysis. This is absolutely critical. Every time we go to an event, we have somebody there is recording all of the things that go wrong. And when we come back, we actually look at those things and we say, in fact, by the time we've come back from the event, SAP has already informed the head of this department that there's a problem with the hydraulic system that we encountered and it needs to be looked at. We did a straight line test earlier this week on a very wet Kemble airfield, and we found a problem with the steering wheel wiring loom, which has been there all season, but it failed actually at Kemble. So immediately, we've got people working on it, so that by the time we get to Monaco, it's been fixed. There is no best practice that is right for everyone. You know, you can actually say that works really well in this organisation, in this context. But doesn't mean to say it's going to work well in the next organisation. You've got to work out what is best for you, what is right for you, and make sure that you continue to drive to improve the practices that you have in place. Because you can be certain that with the change in thinking, new technology, people will overtake you unless you continue to develop and strive and to keep at the forefront of what is best practice. So why is this relevant to and important to Formula One? Well, first of all, you need to sort of think a little bit about the environment that we're operating in. We operate in an environment which change is constant. We're being driven by change throughout the racing season. FIA regulations, we have to comply. And the FIA have a tendency to clarify regulations during the course of the year. And fortunately for us, the clarification around the diffuser was in our favour. I'm sure you've all read the story. I won't go into it. Car performance. We've got to try and compete with the rest. And if we see what they're doing and see that they have developed something like they saw our development of the diffuser, then we need to react to that. We need to understand why that helps them. We've got to keep driving forward to look for improvements. The season itself, the calendar of events, that creates a timeline. Everything is time-driven because, you know, we had changes that we needed to get to the Barcelona Grand Prix 10 days ago. If you missed that, then you're going to lose something in terms of your ability to make the car go faster and your ability to compete with everybody else who's trying to catch you up. Looking at the seasonal schedule, you don't have to be able to read the detail. You see every red blob on there is a race. So the next one this week is this one, which is Monaco. We'll be on track on Thursday, Friday off, and then Saturday and Sunday as per normal. Now, in previous years, we would have tests going on between these races. So in this week, last week, effectively, we'd have been on track somewhere testing the car. That's all gone, part of the cost drive. which means we have to get even better at what we're doing, because on the Friday, or in this case Monaco Thursday, we have to actually test new components before running them on, deciding whether we're going to run them on the car on Saturday for qualifying and then Sunday for the race. So we're constantly being driven to improve the way we operate by the changes that are taking place, being driven by the FIA and indeed FOTA, who are trying to help reduce costs. The competitive environment is really a contest between the rulemakers, who are trying to slow cars down, trying to improve overtaking, trying to do all this good stuff, and the F1 engineers, who are trying to make the cars go faster. And let's be frank about this, if we can do something which disrupts the airflow for the cars behind so that they can't overtake us, then that's going to help us if we're in front, isn't it? No, I shouldn't be saying that. No. In all seriousness, we did some work on the diffuser, actually, and we're able to demonstrate that the diffuser that we'd put on the car, this double-deck diffuser, didn't actually make a blind bit of difference to the turbulence in the airflow following us. And that was a key part of the argument that we used when we were with the FIA in Paris. The technical regulations are extensive. I mean, you could have a degree in the technical regulations for Formula One. And one of the problems that McLaren got into in Australia was that Davy Ryan, I think, didn't have his finger entirely on the button in terms of the rules around what happens behind a safety car when one car goes off the track. But he needed to know, just like that, to be able to maximise that moment, and unfortunately got into a pickle because of it, because of not being up to speed on it. But these technical regulations are open to some interpretation. Witness the diffuser. But you can gain competitive advantage, and this is where we've scored this year, because every now and again, along comes a complete shake-up on the technical regs, and that's happened for this season. With a narrow rear wing, higher up, rider front wing, lower down, all of the other bits and bobs that have been attached to the car have been taken off, like the little flick-ups and barge balls and things like that, all designed to try and improve the spectacle of racing and to improve the ability for cars to overtake, make them a bit more unstable as well. And this gives people the opportunity to redesign the car from the ground up, and we took the decision to do that much earlier than anybody else, because last season's car was frankly rubbish, and there wasn't a lot of point in flogging the dead horse. You know, we may as well move on and try and work on the new car. So if in effect we're further up the development curve on this new set of technical regulations than most others, and perhaps had a little bit more time to understand those grey areas and to understand how we could exploit them for competitive advantage. And you can see how important it is to get it right, because the teams that are playing catch-up with respect to the diffuser have got to put a lot more energy into developing models, sticking it in the wind tunnel, checking to see whether it's going to work, and getting it on the car. So it's quite critical, this. And really, to be successful in Formula One, you've got to be able to get a really quick car on track for the first race that is going to last the whole race, so it's reliable, it's safe, so that things aren't going to break on it, which are going to cause the driver an injury, or indeed marshals or anybody else. And that's all very well. We rocked up to Melbourne, we won that race. There was a good chance we would win the second race, because it was only 1 week later. But as soon as the teams had seen what we were doing, they were already working on things to improve their car. And we didn't make any changes to our car from the beginning of the season through to Barcelona, the last race. Now, in Bahrain, we really didn't expect to win, because all the other teams have been throwing stuff at the car to improve the performance of their cars. And in effect, if you looked at the lap times, they were catching us up. Now, we were successful in Bahrain thanks to a bit of good fortune, but also some very good driving from Jensen, which resulted in us actually achieving a remarkable success, really. But you've got to outdevelop your competition, your opposition, during the course of the season if you want to stay in front. And that is the biggest challenge we've got, because we don't have the budget now that the larger teams, the McLarens and the Ferraris, have got. So We've got to do it by doing it better, you know, by making sure that our processes and practices are better than the opposition. Just looking at the sort of an outline of the scheduling that goes on, you know, we are currently racing. The car was effectively built, but the design work started way back in 2008. We've got to develop the car through the season. Some will be minor updates and some will be major updates, and continue to bring new things to the car. Because if we carried on racing with the car we took to Melbourne throughout the rest of the season, at least half of the pack would have overtaken us because of the development work that they're doing to the car. We have already started on the car for next year. There's some significant changes coming next year as well, like, for example, there will be no refuelling next year. So in pit stops, there'll be no refuelling. We need to put a larger fuel tank into the car. So that has quite a significant impact on the design of that area of the car and how we manage the fuel. There's pressure on the engine suppliers to make the engines more efficient as well, which is obviously a good thing moving forward. And when we get into the latter part of the year, we used to go off and do lots of winter tests. We haven't quite agreed what we're going to do just yet, but it's evident from our own schedule that we've actually only got one test planned in December, and then January and February there might be the opportunity of some more. And so it goes on. But what's going on behind the scenes is that advanced research that we have to start with, which goes on right at the beginning of sort of February, I would say, this year, ready for next year's car. There's a real sort of loop going on there. We're looking at the concepts, we're evaluating what they can do. Then it spills out into the aerodynamics area where CFD and aero people are working on those models and those concepts, developing models that they run in the wind tunnel, evaluating them and going around the loop again. And this is going on constantly, all the time. So if you just take a Barcelona update, we're doing a lot of that work for barge boards, front wing, rear wing, floor. All those sort of changes are going on, all those separate projects, and all the time they're just iterations. And then eventually it comes out of aerodynamics and gets into the main design office, and we manufacture it, run it on the track, evaluate it, and race it. But even then, you've got changes and improvements and things that haven't gone wrong, they've got to be fixed. And sometimes that's got to go right back to sort of the aerodynamics as well, because the update that we've done worked well in the wind tunnel but doesn't appear to be working as well on the track. So what's happened? And this feedback is important. It's happening all the time. We sit down and review what we've done, plan what we're doing next, how we're going to react based on what we've learned. So some of the things that we're doing to help this is integrating key areas together. We used to have CFD over in one building, aerodynamics in another building, and we've got them together. The CFD guys sit in the aero designer teams now, so they're working on parts of the car together. So we do a lot of work with CFD computation modelling prior to actually building a model itself, which of course starts to ramp up your cost, before then running it in the wind tunnel. We've got the stress engineers integrated into the aero department, so that they're looking at the structures as they're designing the concepts and getting them off the drawing board to become models, but also in the design group, so that we've got this immediate feedback. People working together that need to work together, even though they've got very different skill sets, because they're helping us to get the best possible design, which then ends up in manufacturing, obviously. We've integrated our CAD-CAM, PDM and ERP systems so that we've improved the process through the organisation. And we are measuring what we're doing. We're measuring non-conformance. We're measuring the amount of capacity we've got in-house in the machine shop versus how much we're spending externally on third parties doing the manufacturing for us. And if we've got capacity but we're still spending money externally, then we're going, well, why are we doing that? And it's all about measuring, managing and monitoring what you're doing so that you can then decide how to improve things going forward. In fact, the chief executive officer is heading the manufacturing efficiency group, and it shows you the level of attention from very high up in the organisation on something that is quite critical. Look at the operations at the track side. The pit stop can be the difference between winning a race and not winning a race. It's critical for us that these guys, and there's 25, 26 blokes, I think, involved at a pit stop, that they know exactly what they're doing, that they practice, that we've done everything so that it's just where it needs to be. The box is marked out. The drivers had plenty of practice driving into the box on the Friday and the Saturday before we actually get down to the serious business in qualifying and then Sunday. But just picking up one of the things which was said this morning, which I hadn't actually thought to include in here. One of the things that we've done, again, this is all about cost for us now. We've got to manage cost and we've got to be competitive. We have actually virtualized all of the servers that we've got in the trackside environment. We're taking smaller racks, fewer servers, fewer equipment, if you like. So we're using less power. There's less freight cost and less space being taken up. And so best practice actually spills out into all sorts of different areas in order to try and make this team competitive. We've got to have the right culture as well. For us, it's important that it's a no-blame culture. If somebody is worried about trying something, then they're not going to try it. We want people to try stuff out, and if it doesn't work, let's learn from that and move on. And the plan, do, review sort of and the feedback loop that we've talked about already is quite critical inside the organisation to make it work properly. You do need to know when to stop flogging the dead horse, as we did last year, and you also need to know when you should go back and review things that you have done previously that wasn't working then, but now that regulations have changed, perhaps will work now. But with the budget capping coming, this is becoming even more important. I mean, for us, best practice is absolutely key. Under Honda, when we had Shuhei Nakamoto-san as the senior technical director, the answer to any problem was get more people. That's no longer possible for us, and it's certainly not the right way of going. We have limited budgets with Honda's withdrawal. It's vital for us that we maximise the value of the budget to it the best possible competitiveness that we can achieve. And so doing things right and in the best possible way is key to us going forward. And one of the reasons that Ferrari and Red Bull and others, Renault, are really upset about the FIA saying there'll be a budget cap of 40 million is because this is actually quite hard to do. It's quite hard to get from a situation where the way to deal with a problem was to throw more money at it to a situation where you're limited by your budget, and to be competitive, you've got to maximise the value of that and make sure everybody's working effectively and properly. And that's why they've thrown their toys out the pram, because in effect, we've had to do it already, and we've had to tighten the belt and make sure that everything is working effectively inside the organisation. And really for us, it's going to become, if it's not already, a prerequisite to success in Formula One. It's going to be absolutely key that these organisations manage what they're doing more effectively and make sure that the processes inside their organisation are working as effectively and as properly as they can. And not just processes, but systems and the way people communicate together, the whole nine yards, soup to nuts, inside the organisation. So that's me done. I've had a 5-minute warning flashed at me, so there's probably a couple of minutes for questions if anybody would like to ask any. One over there first.
When you go cap in hand to Ross for some money to invest in IT, how do you actually justify it? What parametrics do you use?
Very good question. The easiest way to persuade Ross to spend money on IT is to demonstrate how that investment is going to make the car go faster. And that's quite tricky, actually, because quite a lot of the investments within IT are not direct, don't have a direct effect on car performance. So it can be quite difficult sometimes to line up your argument and to make it fit. This is something we've done not just this year, but in previous years as well. But it's a lot harder to spend money right now on improvements in IT. We've really got to demonstrate that there's going to be cost savings which can be used for car development or car performance. So we work very closely with our customers in the business area, particularly where an IT investment is something that is going to be of direct benefit to them, to make sure that there's a good business case. One over here at the back.
You mentioned when Ross Brawn came in, he brought in a series of structures and continuous improvement. In terms of the change management, is there a very strict organisation structure and meeting structure and timetable for the changes that are coming through?
Yes, in fact, we're just looking at how we can improve this area, because if you take the Barcelona upgrade, for example, which the changes which went to Barcelona were not all of the changes that we wanted to take to Barcelona. And we set out with we're going to do a front wing, an under tray, you know, a floor, changes to barge boards, changes to this, that, and the other. And what we find is that you've got this fixed deliverable point, and you've got a load of scope which is moving. So you might have some scope which is going to land on that delivery and be a part of that development upgrade, and some scope which was supposed to be there which will slip back. Or you may have some which has come forward because we can see that we can get it ready quicker, or it's going to give us a particularly good improvement in car performance, therefore we want to get it there. And this is a big challenge, because you start moving stuff around, you take a front wing or something like that, you've got to make sure that your pattern shop can cope with the fact that you've changed the timetable on it, that they've got the capacity, that the carbon fibre people are able to do the work on it as well, that the paint shop are ready, that the build people can cope with it. And while you're moving all this stuff around, you've got to be communicating a lot, and you need to understand the effect of the change that's being proposed. And there's always a problem with this, because the aerodynamicists want to hang on to it as long as they possibly can before they release it to the design office, because they want to get that extra little bit of performance. The design office want to hang on to it as long as they can in order to make sure that it's absolutely right. And, of course, the manufacturing guys at the end of the chain are going, we really needed it last week or the week before. But Formula One is so time-driven that you make it happen. Weekends are contingency. One other question here.
I kind of lost my question a little bit in listening to your response there.
Okay, I have notice of that one.
It's okay, I haven't really lost the question.
When you're changing so many things on the car in one weekend, no test, how do you keep back to the baseline? Is it the front wing that's not working, or the under floor, or some change?
This is another area where we're just developing the way we do this at the moment. I'll be frank with you, I don't know, because they don't tell me what they're doing. But I am aware of the fact that, for example, we've stuck a front wing on the car and people have scratched their head and said, well, we're not actually sure if that's helped. So we actually need to improve those areas, and I wouldn't say to you that we have got the best practice sorted out just yet.
How do you manage IT risk? So you talked a lot about how you manage change in terms of building the car, but it's clearly a whole load of things that you need to do to the IT infrastructure that aren't related to car performance, but maybe related to reliability of the environment or failures.
Essential maintenance,
and which takes time, and assumably takes time away from the schedule of making the car faster.
Yeah.
So how do you manage that risk in the business?
Interesting question, because we have found it very difficult to agree downtime. we want to schedule a maintenance window to, replace this aging piece of hardware, which, we had this situation last autumn, actually, because we had a data network upgrade to do. And that's the heartbeat of the organisation, virtually, the sort of the communications network. And we have to go into the planning of the downtime very, very carefully, work out what is the optimum in terms of the amount of time you're going to take systems off air against the risk of chopping it up or doing it all in one go or whatever it might be. But as a more general answer to the question, we actually utilise a change freeze every week of a race. So from 9 a.m. Monday morning through to about 10 p.m. on a Sunday evening, we will make no changes unless we absolutely have to. And if we have got to, then there's a communication and an approval process to go through to make sure that everybody who needs to know knows that we're making the changes. Because we used to have a situation where the IT engineer on the race team, who holds the fuel hose, by the way, so everybody mucks in. The IT guy on the race team would rock up to an event, say, in North America, and go, well, hang on a minute, this worked at the last event. Why isn't it working now? And only to discover that somebody made a change back at the factory, which they didn't know about. So we locked that down. But this business about downtime, getting a downtime window, has been an increasing problem. Actually, the FIA and FOTA have just given us a golden opportunity because they've told all of the Formula One teams that they should take a two-week shutdown in the summer. So after the Hungarian Grand Prix, there's 2 weeks when we're not allowed to work on the car, but we are allowed to do maintenance work on wind tunnels, IT systems and the like. So now our approach to that kind of thing has changed because we're going to be focusing more on putting more through in one week when everything's offline. Last question.
Just a quick follow-up to that. How do you deal with outages during the race week? Because, I mean, outages to you over the race weekend must be...
We work hard not to have them. The last outage during a race week was a power failure. And we actually don't have generator power because really the question that was posed earlier on about the how do you get an investment through, it was like, we don't need to do that, do we? We'd rather spend the money on the car. Last question.
Your bottom line is very obvious to all your employees. You win or you lose.
Yeah.
How important do you think visibility of that bottom line is in terms of the collective understanding of the common goal and working together in the collaborative way you describe? Because that, for me, is...
It's absolutely key. I said to you on one of the first slides that everybody's passionate about racing. You know, they wear their hearts on their sleeve, their emotion and what have you. It's very clear if you've had a bad weekend, everybody's got long faces on the Monday. Whereas if you've done well, everybody's up and it's fantastic. Mind you, everybody's up most of the time and they just love working in the environment. But having that single common focus, everybody in the team striving for one thing, race wins, does make it easier. Thank you very much, everyone.